fast.
Oh, yeah, they're extremely fast. I think 35 miles an hour or something like that.
Well, you can't herd them with a horse.
No, you can't.
Yeah, they're too fast. They'll nail a horse.
Yep.
So that's one of the problems with raising buffalo. You can't herd them. They herd themselves.
Well, they're massive.
Oh, they're huge.
Gosh, they are delicious, though.
You had buffalo stuff?
Oh, I love buffalo. I'm allergic to beef, so buffalo is my only alternative in terms of railroad meat. So,
do you go over to the butcher and the burger? Our buddy Al, who's been on the show, he has buffalo burgers.
I have not. I'll have to go over there and check his out.
Armitage, right by St. Elizabeth, sir.
I've made my husband a connoisseur of buffalo burgers, so
really,
we'll have to go check him out. Yeah,
you know, but Al's got the good stuff. He regales me for like an hour about how he make home. You know, you don't home make your pickles, but you pickle your pickles home.
Right.
And how he does it just right, and his grandmother. I mean, Al, geez, enough with the pickles, no. But he's serious into it. But I get the feeling, Steph, that somewhere along the line here, the buy and holders, this might be a time. You've been on the show enough to know that I've sensed a change here, a tone change. And I know I've been early. I sensed it a year or two ago, but it's starting to play out here. I mean, the gold's going up. Your interest rates are, and now everybody's starting to blame the Fed. Even I was talking to some people in the real estate industry over the weekend, and they're not real happy with it. But it's,
you know, the real estate industry's having a hard time at the moment. There's not a lot of buying or selling going on out there. No, I mean, if you look at a lot of the big firms and what they're recommending, they're all suggesting 2020 is the year when we can expect serious pullback. But I actually think that the sentiment at the moment in the last, I don't know, 3 weeks has significantly changed. And it just seems that everyone's a little less positive than they've been over the last couple years. So that, to me, usually indicates that there's a change in the wind. The question is, when does that change actually happen? So my guess is this will be a little bit of a pullback, and then we'll kind of keep moving on, but at a slower pace. If not, we'll do a lot of volatility kind of back and forth, and then play it out, who knows, next year, maybe the year after, who knows.
You know what, Steph, what you just said is, by the way, that's the universal view, I think, and it probably is accurate, but that is so different from my experience in the market. It's mine was a guy who traded in a pit.
Yep.
And I mean, I'm not one of these guys where that has, I'm not a Vulcan where I'm, you know, like Spock, where you could kind of project your thoughts or something. But when you're sitting in a pit and you see some puts there and you think, boy, I wonder if I should grab those, you need to grab them instantly because somebody will do it. It's almost like there was your thought energy. But the idea that, yeah, the market's, you know, in a crap bag, but oh, by the way, you're okay for a year. That has never played out for me. I've been early all the time, you know, where I thought things were either going bad or things were going good. And I was, you know, I was usually right, but always early. But the idea that somehow or another we're going to start coming off this stuff, but we don't have to worry about it for a year. I don't see where the hell that comes. I mean, I honestly don't. I'm not arguing back at you. If things are starting to come unglued, they're starting to come unglued.
Well, I don't disagree with that statement. I'm just saying I don't think we're going to, you know, everyone's looking for the crash in the bottom, right? And the day then we go down 200 points, and that's the day that everyone's worried about, right? And so my point is just, I think that we're in a place where the chances of that have increased, but who knows when that day is going to happen? So, you know, I can't predict it any better than you can, better than everyone else can. So, but I see some softening, and usually when you see softening, it takes a while for that softening to make a huge impact. So you're right, completely, especially if you're in the pit. All that softening right there, it impacts your bottom line because you're playing for smaller numbers, bigger numbers overall, but smaller numbers on each individual stock trade, or share, I should say. So, you know, your impact is just better, is bigger. So I guess that's where I stand.
Well, I think some of it comes down to, I have a different view in my education in economics is there's a million economic decisions being made, and we've already made some this morning, going to the Dunkin' Donuts. You know, you make these decisions, and people seem to think that they can predict when other people are going to make, quote, that particular decision. They're going to say nobody's going to get out of the stock market until interest rates are, you know, on a bond is 6% or 5% or something like that. Yet that's, in my mind, that's absolutely untrue. If somebody has, and I have clients with, you know, several clients with seven-figure accounts, and some of them have already put $200,000 to $300,000. They'll call up and say, you know, we're not even using that $800,000 I was going to put in the market. You know what? Why don't you feel free to use $500,000, but let's put $300,000 in a T-bill for 6 months. I've already seen those decisions starting to happen.
Yeah, I've started making those decisions for my personal
account. Yeah, so once you start making them, it's not like 1981 where you say, hey, get me out of stocks, I can get 13% of Continental Bank, which doesn't even exist anymore. You're not there yet. But it's like people who say nobody cuts down on their travel to gas gets to $4. Well, when that, I very seldom say this, that's a stone cold ignorant statement.
It is.
Because at 3:20, somebody's going to say, I'll take the wife's putt-putt car instead of my Suburban to the store because I get, you know, it's just me in there and I'll save a little gas this morning. What? And it, you know, at 2:50, he probably doesn't care. At 3:00, he'll take the wife's car to the store. You know, at 3:50, maybe he'll dump the Suburban. I mean, there's a million decisions along the way there. It's not just one.
No, but that's my point. So just like you said, you know, individuals take less money and put it into being active, put more on the side or put more in bonds or something like that. Well, I'm starting to see that myself, and that usually indicates that there's going to be clearly a slowdown because there's less money going into, you know, making the market go up. But I don't see people not making that $5,000 investment. Do you know what I'm saying? They still think something's good. They're going to buy a little bit of it. They're not going to. And that's when the sentiment changes, when they're like, no, I'm just holding out. I don't think this is a good time to get in. And that's when things make that kind of 180 shift. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, yes. And I think for a long time, and the guys who did this, by the way, guys and ladies, did very well. I mean, and, you know, I think that when I started the business, and I know this is ancient history to most people, but people don't change. The sentiment doesn't change.
No.
I mean, you know, you can read an article from 1980, it's the same as today, pretty much.
Right.
When you had people back in those days, let's say you walk in, you and your significant other walk in, and how old are you, blah, blah, you're working, you're doing this and everything. I can pretty much, you know, with your help, with a bunch of questions, I can say that the quote normal portfolio for somebody, I'm going to say your guy's age, with the 401ks and all the stuff you got going, probably you'd want to be, if everything was, I'll say, at equilibrium, you'd want to be, you know, 50-60% in stocks, a few layered different types of fixed income, and maybe 10-15% in cash in case we saw something. And I'm talking about cash that while it's sitting at PTI, you're making 3% on it. It's not like
you're
getting buckus like we have been for a long time. So that would probably be, I would say, the quote normal portfolio. Now you're a little bit more of a trader than that because you've worked in the trading floors and so forth. So you might be a little more aggressive. But just in general, that would be sort of what you'd expect the normal quote family to have, investment family.
I agree.
And whenever you get problems, when I say problems, discontinuities in the market, and people go more one way or the other. Well, I remember in 1987 or 82, why the hell would you be anywhere but earning 12 or 13? Robin, the best you got at Continental Bank for 6 months was 15.5%, though. 15.5%.
Yeah, those days not existed when I was in the market.
But what happened was everybody had all their money in that.
Yep.
I mean, I'm going to say the mutual fund salesman, if you'd have walked into a party in 1981 and said, your pinky up with your wine glass, although people didn't drink much wine back then, your Manhattan class, and say, you know what, I'm going right down the block and I'm going to pull my money out of the bank and I'm going to find my mutual fund guy, he's probably painting houses now, and I'm going to put my money in the market at 800 where the Dow was.
Mm-hmm.
That guy would have been flipped out the front door. He absolutely would have been ostracized.
Right.
And now 2 years ago, if you were to say, man, you know, it's not paying much, these interest rates, but I'm gonna take my money out of the market, you know, 6 months ago, and put it in cash. They'd look at you like you had four heads, because right now, people that normally would be in this 40-60, you know, 40-50-10 range, are all balls in. I mean, if you everybody in a 401k is nothing but long stacks because, hey, I'm not getting any money in cash. Why would I do that? You know, with T-bills, why would I do that? Now, but now people's portfolio don't match their normal stuff. So it's not like if the market pulls back 10%, people are losing 10% on 60%. They're going to be losing 10% on 100%.
Right.
And not only that, if they happen to chase the fangs, they're down, what? Some of those are down 20%.
Yeah.
So if you made more money than the other people in the last few years because you were in the market got so narrow. I mean, how many times we talk about that in the air stuff? Market was getting so narrow that, you know, clients would call up and they'd say, how come we're not doing as well as the market? And I said, well, do you want to be in Amazon? Well, hell no. Okay.
Right. You really those only five got stocks four have been, or five stocks to yeah, get into. Yeah.
It got narrower and narrower, and now it's playing out. And everybody's blaming the Fed and everything else, but what's the Fed going to be at 1.5% when the inflation's 5?
Honestly, it makes no sense. I mean, the Fed's doing what the Fed should be doing. If there's an expectation that things there may be a decline in the future, the Fed needs some tools, which is interest rates is their primary tool. They need some tools in order to be able to assist with any potential bad situations in the future. So they've got to raise interest rates, and you know, the market has been tooling along, not the market, just the economy in general has been tooling along. The market's not always a good indication of the economy, and it's the right time to do it. So I think the Fed's making the right decision. It may not be popular, but it's, I think, the right decision.
Do you think, looking back on it, and I don't know how history ever is going to, and I have my opinion, but then again, opinion, and I say opinion in a quarter, you got your phone call, but there's no phones anymore. Do you think that the Fed going from 3% down to 2% down to 0.5% down to 0% or 0.25%, wherever they got, they never quite made it to zero. You think that ever did any good for anybody?
Well, I think it did, especially at the height of the crash.
Why?
I mean, it made it very easy to take cash in to banks when they were cash strapped. I mean, when it costs you nothing, practically nothing to take money in, then you can afford to do it, and they were cash strapped. Now, they might have done it whether interest rates were that low or not, but because, frankly, they needed the money. But yeah, I think it's their one tool they have, and it does make a difference around the world.
But, I mean, how would you ever... I mean, I know it's very difficult to even have the discussion because you can't prove the negative, right? But I'm saying that I have no idea, and I'm real skeptical, that going from savers getting 1% to savers getting 0 did anybody any good. I don't know if they ever came down on the credit cards. I think they didn't. If they ever came down on the other stuff, was it just a way to float banks or what? I mean, I don't know that ever did the economy any good.
That's what the Fed's job is just to float banks. I mean, their job is not, they don't deal with savings rates or they don't deal with, I mean, none of that is what they're there for. They're literally just to keep liquidity in the banks so that banks don't go under and we don't all lose our money in banks. I mean, that's what they were set up to do. So to look at them and say, hey, you know, on my bank account, I'm not making the interest rate percentage. Well, it's partly because the bank that you're at can borrow money for so cheap. But it's also that there's just, you know, so that means that they don't get paid any money to borrow money from anywhere else because it's cheap to get it from the Fed. So it that keeps interest rates down, and I'm not explaining it well, but nevertheless.
Well, you've got me on one of my subjects here, but you did this. This is all your fault, by the way.
I'll take responsibility.
Yes. I agree with you 100% that the Fed's job is to deal with the banking system. I think that they have taken it upon themselves to protect individual banks, and I don't think it's the same thing.
It's not the same thing. And actually, if you look at it, the smaller banks are less protected by them than the bigger banks.
Right.
And honestly, the smaller banks do more for our communities and for our individuals in terms of small loans to, you know, businesses, car loans, all sorts of that. The small banks are really the lifeblood of America, and the Fed in general doesn't work directly with them.
I think it screws with them. I think they actively work against them. I think it's worse than that, vis-a-vis the big ones.
They do. Well, you know, having been at Fannie, Freddie, and those organizations also don't work with the small banks well, and they're the ones that really need to lay off a lot of their mortgages in order to have enough capital to lend to a home, or I should say a business owner, or a somebody who needs to buy a car or have a temporary loan to upgrade your house or something like that. So, you know, they make those things more difficult for smaller banks.
Well, do you think you should ever, other than, I'm not talking about, you know, putting money in the system when things were going under in 2008 or 9. Of course, whether they should have been recognized by the Fed and whether we should have ever got there, it's kind of hard to reward the same guy for making the save when he's the one who didn't see the leak there in the first place. I mean, we do that a lot in this country. I'm not so sure I'm big on that. It's like, I don't know if you had a son that didn't cut the grass for 2 weeks and then went out and made the save and said, look how it looks now, and it took me 5 hours. Well, the reason why it took you 5 hours, you didn't cut it last week, right?
Yeah, well, that's the same. I have the same problem with the way we deal with natural disasters, and we just pay people to build back in the exact same place, at the exact same, structure, exact same building code. That's the part that kills me.
Oh, yeah. It's special. But, the idea of whenever you do something like this, though, I look around, and part of this is I have my guys. They're not guys. Aud and her troop of real estate people who are, shall we say, they're outspoken women. Is that a fair statement?
I'd say that's fair.
Yeah, that's fair.
I would say, I put it this way, I would say they are not shy.
No, they are not shy. But you look at the hardship. I mean, everybody in America wants to take one for the team. But if you take a very simple 2% number and say, okay, for the last 8 years, everybody who had savings someplace, be it T-bills, be it in a bank, be it somewhere, and I think we're being real conservative on this stuff, I'm going to say in a normal times you'd have made 2% more than you would have made in the last 8 years, 9 years. You'd have made 2% in the bank. Your T-bill would have been...
Oh, that's what you mean. Okay.
Would have been 2.5 instead of a half. You know, I'm not talking about big numbers. I'm just saying the risk-free rate has been 2.5 to 3 for centuries, and it was, what, a half to one?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, everyone thinks interest rates rising is going to be horrendous. In some ways, it won't be. You know, if you have any money in the bank, you actually may make a little bit, which would be a new revelation from the last 10 years.
Yeah, and what I'm saying is if you take that number and you go through, you can do this on the Internet. Probably could do it at a library, too, but it'd be better. If I actually did this one day, believe this, this is how bored I was. I went through, it was pouring rain, I was supposed to go for a walk at home, so I'm going to go and see how much this money actually is. Because we had just had David Stockman on, and he was ranting and raving about the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through, if you take all the T-bills, all the time deposits at banks, which, in-demand deposits, and you look at all that stuff, and you put 2% on it, it comes out to about $350 billion a year for savers, difference mm-hmm. between, which means banks aren't paying it and the government's not paying it. Okay, now,
yep.
Obviously, if you were paying it, if you were earning it, 30% of it's probably going to go to taxes. So the government's going to get some of it back, right? So in other words, it's not, they're going to get some of it back. So it's not like they lose out on the whole thing. But you look at the repercussions of that. And you see, going to areas where people are retired, you go to Orland, you go to these kind of places,
yep.
And you'll see these homes that should have had a roof 5 years ago and don't, or the windows should have been. You see the effects of it all over the place.
Yes, for sure.
And it's not just let the old people take one for the team. I mean, it's reaching a point after this length of time. So the Fed is, I think, trying to get back. I mean, there's people that would say, well, why are they raising interest rates? Look what's on the market. I said, why should you give money to people for free that are going to turn around and use it and make money on it?
Exactly.
I mean, it's become so ingrained. Why would you ever do that? I mean, in the Stone Ages, if you lend a guy 100 stones, at the end of the year, you're supposed to bring him back 102.
Yeah.
I mean,
otherwise,
right?
Otherwise, the bank owner just doesn't make any money.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in the Fed charter, I mean, my only concern is – And I don't, if they want to go female, knock yourself out. I want you to be the female sitting there. Cause you recognize that there's people outside of that room. The Fed charter is supposed to have on the governor, a couple of those guys are supposed to be from other walks of life, other industries, and yes. They're not. So you end up just dealing with the people in the room.
No, and they've got a bunch of spots open still, don't they?
Yeah. Well, how many actual outside board guys are there? Five? Then there's all the bank people?
I forgot. At one point I know, but there's supposed to be at least a minimum of three, I think.
Well, but I'm going to say there's, we come back, we'll talk about this, because yeah. I have a hunch that there's 12 banks, but only 8 vote, right? Then I think there's 5 governors appointed by the Congress, I believe. Anyway, SP Futures still down 31. We'll talk a little bit more about that when we come back. We'll have Mr. Joel Unkonen, and we'll talk about the market and Michigan football and their fight up at MSU. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including 4 past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering 3 research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top 3 tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than 3 decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Archie, Stephanie Coney, Jay-Z on the board. We'll have Mr. Joel on Canada in a second. We're going deeper in the hole here. We got the S&P futures now down 36, down on 314. It was 2-something when we came in. The NASDAQ down 116, so ouch on that. We're not even really talking about this much this morning because these numbers are awful. DAX down 185, 1.6. FTSE down 39.6%. CAC around down 55, 1.1. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei up down 604. That's 2.7%. Barely over 22,000. 22,010. It's as low as... I'm going to take a look at that stuff next break, and I think it's a low for quite a while. Shanghai down 60. They were up 4% yesterday. They're down 2.25% today. 25.94, but still... They were as low as 25.50 the other day, so they're still above that. Hang Seng, however, down 8.06. That's over 3%, 3.08. So they're probably the biggest loser this morning so far. Oil, whack, whack, whack again, is now Saudis saying they're going to help out with the oil as a way to get back in everybody's good graces after cutting this guy up. Oil down $1.09. It's 1.5%. 68.27. Brent down $1.52. The spread is now $10.04. Natural gas up a penny, 3.15. RBOB, good for filling up the jalopy, down 1.86. It was like 198 like 2 weeks ago. Big rally in gold though, up $13. Silver up 14 cents. So I'm going to say my guys are going to have a good day in the midst of this carnage stuff. So that's not all bad. Jay-Z, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Thanks, Chief. Good morning, everyone. The time is now 6:36. Clear weather here in Chicago today. Today's high is going to be 52 with a low of 41. Phoenix is cloudy with a high of 86 and a low of 65. Falcons keep their playoff hopes alive with their win against the Giants last night. Final score ended 23-20. Mavericks beat the Bulls yesterday with a final score of 115-109. And next up was the Warriors versus the Suns. And the Warriors came out on top, ending the game 123-103. One accident on the Eisenhower just before 9th Avenue. Expect up to 20-minute delays and nothing else to report. Back to you.
We forgot about all the shootings. That I-57 was closed.
Well, they're not closed now.
No, they just opened up on the way in. They had somebody was blasting somebody and the car ran into a wall. And I can't figure out if the people died because they went under the wall or got shot. So,
I don't know about men. The cops were flying down my street last night.
It's we need some... Need some something. Joel, how are you, buddy?
It's great to be a Michigan Wolverine, Chief.
What's with your guy going out and scuffing up the field?
Well, you heard what happened. Michigan State went out before the game. They formed a chain link, a clothesline fence, and they clotheslined one of the Michigan football players. And the reason they did that is they knew they were going to get hung out to dry during the game, and so they were just taking cheap shots before the game. And one of our linebackers retaliated by just defecating on the S-Sparty, right in front of everybody. It was what rivalries are supposed to be. Now they want to be our rival. Well, they got a little taste of what it's like to be a Michigan rival.
Why don't the chairmen of both universities suspend both coaches for like a month?
Oh, come on. I mean, it was all Michigan State. I mean, the Dan Antonio was out there. He was condoning the actions. He was walking behind the players. He was smiling after it happened. Harbaugh had absolutely nothing to do with it.
All right,
it was pre-planned by the Sparties.
So why do they get away? Why does an adult, the chairman of the university, watch that and say this is okay?
I don't know if they did. I guess they're looking into it, but you know, it's just rivalries. That's what, like I said, that's what Michigan State wanted, and that's what they got.
Yeah, well, we used to TP, you know, our rivals, you know, school. That was a little less, I don't know. Defecating on the field
TP,
seems a little...
I haven't heard that word in a long time. Yeah, that's, I did that to quite a few people in high school, and I ended up, well, I used to get TP'd almost every weekend in high school. People got back to me, but, no, it's good. You know, we still got a lot, you know, we got Penn State at home, so that's an important game. Ohio State looked terrible against Purdue.
What is that all about?
72 passes.
Wow.
The rumor has it, well, of course, so guess what Billy was wearing last night, Steph, is you didn't show up to the caucus.
Hey, that's a really weird question to ask, first of all. And B, with Halloween coming up, I can only imagine.
No, Billy's a Purdue swimmer. So Billy dug the Purdue tie that he's had in the bottom of the drawer for about 10 years, and he was proudly wearing it last night.
I see.
Yeah. I don't think Purdue's that bad, though. Didn't they? He said they lost a couple of games early, and then they changed quarterbacks, and this new coach is actually doing pretty well.
They lost to Eastern of all teams, but what's the name of it? They got a running back. Is it Rondell Moore or something like that? He's supposed to. I haven't seen him play yet, but they're talking that he might be one of the best running backs in the country. Right up there with Caron Higdon. You know, Michigan State was averaging 62 yards rushing per game, and Caron Higdon on his own had 144. They were the number one ranked rushing defense in the country, and we just slashed through them like butter.
Wow. Well, the I think the Irish had trouble running against them.
Yeah, I mean, that first quarter, though, you know, the first couple plays, you know, from the Irish, you know, that was our worst plays of the season. We get a little bit slow starting, and it really cost us in that game. But who knows if we both can run the table? We may meet again in the playoffs.
Well, the Irish aren't that good. They have a horrible game against Pittsburgh. Then they get a week off, and they're up about four spots in the polls.
Everyone loses.
Because everybody's losing, but it doesn't make them any better. It just means that. Anyway, we do have to talk a little more. What's going on?
China. It's all China. That's all it is. That's all you need to look at. Put up the FXI, you know, the ETF. That's how the S&Ps are trading. That's why we had that ridiculous open yesterday, because China had its best day in 2 years. Now China's down. I guess a big fund in China is talking about unloading stocks. There's been rumors for months that they're unloading, they've been unloading our treasuries. So, you know, the Teflon U.S. market is starting to, you know, the theory that all the money is going to leave all the other bourses and then come to the U.S. is not really coming to fruition here. S&Ps are approaching the low of the move here. The low of the move was 12 and a quarter. We hit 12.75. But, Chief, I got a question for you, because you're the big economics guy, right?
Does that mean I'm a big fatso, or does that mean I'm a big economics guy?
Yeah, you come out, you know, all this. So what, I mean, to me, you know, everyone's worried about rising interest rates, right?
Right.
Right? But on the other hand, banks are getting smoked. Autos are getting smoked.
Yep.
Housing industry is getting smoked. So everyone's worried about higher interest rates, but the market's screaming recession. And inflation, what do you call that? It's not stagflation. Should we call it, like,
stagflation?
What's that called?
I thought we'd never hear that term again in my lifetime, and I think we might.
I think we will.
You think so?
Yeah. What's happening is whenever you bring interest rates down below where they ought to be, which we've done for a while to take care. Who's the Asian guy? No man can do just one thing. You can't just help. You can't just help one industry. You end up propping up asset prices. I mean, and my constant theme on this subject is when you didn't go through the other, when interest rates were high, you lose the reflex action. That as interest rates go up, the housing prices go down. People lose that, and yet anybody who's had a capital asset pricing class realizes they're one and the same. I mean, interest rates go up. Guess what? You're not going to pay as much for the car, because you focus in on the payment. How much can you afford for the house? Okay, now out of that comes taxes, and out of that comes here's your payment. Well, if interest rates are 3%, there will be people who will tell you, Joel, and I've been through this, that the best time to buy a house is when interest rates are low. And I can't tell you that if I'm an economics professor, that is an F paper. The best time to buy a house is when interest rates are 15% and the house is 80 grand. Because if you can afford it there, guess what happens? The interest rates are going to come down because they're unsustainable at 15, and you can keep refinancing. And the minute you do, that house keeps walking up. It's a whole different, it's exactly the opposite of what most people think. And you can talk about it till the cows come home or you're blue in the face, but you're not going to convince anybody. Right? I mean, so now you have this repricing again. I mean, the normal house is back above the price that somebody can afford it at a regular mortgage rate. And in the meantime, you've got the taxes slipping through. I don't know what yours are, Steph, but another contributor to the show who lives in a downtown area, he's got a 30% increase in Chicago. Well, guess what? It wasn't up to me to tell him because he was mad enough as it was, but I'm going to say the price of his house just dropped 8 to 10% with that
that's
letter.
Huge,
for sure. Yep. With that letter. And until people put one and two together, you know, I mean, you can't, these people we vote for, they don't seem to get it, or they do get it. But that's why interest rates should be stable. So people can and I'm not saying they should always be 3%. I mean, if things overheat and you go to 3.5 or 4, that's one thing. Or if you get down to 2, that's one thing. But to go to 12 or to go to 0, it's way too much for the Fed. You screw everything up. You screw everything up. And they have, right? I mean, in my opinion. So I don't know.
Chief, did I lob you up a softball there?
You got me on my soapbox. I don't know.
I knew it. I was talking with the boys on the desk, and I took one econ class pass fail. I did pass it, but I figured I'd talk to an economics expert like you. And you know, that's what, you know, look at the banks. The banks broke down yesterday. The housing. I mean, it just, I don't know. If rates are going up and we start to go into a recession, that's the worst of all scenarios.
Absolutely.
Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I think it's time to hunker down a little bit. And, you know, when you have...
Your feeling is getting out. Joel, we got to talk about it next week. You know, we might have you... The market keeps going like this. I probably want you back before Friday. We'll talk some more about it, if you don't mind.
Take care
of yourself. SP Futures down 34. Yikes. Dow Futures down over 300. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters. the daily news, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Low and opaque Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom. She's Stephanie Koenig. She is Jay-Z. Jessica's Lucy on the board. SP Futures down 40, Steph? What the hell? Dow down 374. NASDAQ down 112. This is a...
It's going to be an exciting day.
It's going to be an exciting day, is right. I don't really have... I, for one, don't have any real danger here. We've got puts that are now in the money on the XLE, so we'll get hit a little bit there. And I think we'll be up on gold and silver, so... I don't like to make money when everybody else isn't, but I'll take it.
Why not?
Yeah, why not? We'll do a little something. We're starting to see some coming unglued here. I don't know. Hey, Kenny, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing all right. I was watching you all last week. You got a lot of airtime.
Yeah, I had a lot of airtime last week. There was a lot going on, so I had the opportunity to have a lot of airtime.
Once in a while, they want to get somebody on there who's actually seen some of this before and has something to say every once in a while.
Right.
Same, you know.
And has some experience with it.
Yeah, it's a... I did not expect this morning. I'm stunned. If you can explain to me, Lucy, why, with the Saudi thing going the way it's going, and oil is down 11% since the whole crisis started, I'm stunned by that. Good thing I got some puts, but I would have thought we'd be 85 with the new crisis over there. Instead, we're going the other way.
Well, you know what they said. They made it very clear, right? I mean, listen, that was the fear that the Saudis were going to weaponize oil in the face of potential severe sanctions, whether it was by the U.S. or other countries. But look, they want to play nice in the sandbox. They've got an issue on their hand. They've got a fairly big issue on its hand, which won't go away. The world is kind of now watching every move they make. And so I think they're basically conceding, saying, look, we're going to play nice in the sandbox. We're going to keep the world well supplied in oil. Iranian sanctions are coming. No need to get worried. We're going to pump more because they're trying to deflect, I think, some of what's happening on the other side, right? All that negative news that's coming out. They're trying to stand up and go, look, we'll be good boys and we'll play nice in the sandbox and we'll pump more oil for the world. And so you get this pressure on, you get the downward pressure on the price of oil because no one's fearful anymore that there's going to be one of those oil embargo type things that you and I remember in 1973 and 1979.
The difference is they don't have anywhere near the percentage of the world market they used to have. They don't have anywhere near. I question.
That might be true. Yeah. That might be true, but I think perception is still that OPEC and Saudi Arabia control a large part of, you know, what happens to oil prices, even though you and I talk about it. Look, U.S. is now a net exporter of oil. Right? And so therefore, I've said it a long time and you have too, we're awash in oil. The world is awash in oil, yet there is still that sense, I think, that the Saudis can somehow weaponize the price of oil and cause kind of global havoc.
Well, they probably could, but there was a time when OPEC was 40% of the market, and now they're 20.
Correct.
And I question, Kenny, whether they can, if Iran, we actually succeed in pulling a million barrels off the market in Iran, which I honestly doubt we will.
Yeah.
If we get a third of that, I'd be stunned.
I would too.
It'll go out the back door somewhere. But I don't think that Saudi can pump up another million. Plus, when the price gets to 75 and they start they start pumping more to do us a favor. I'm thinking they're pumping more because they're getting a great price.
Right. Well, I would agree with you. I think they are too. But I think right now, the reason you're seeing kind of the oil back off is because, you know, they're trying to be conciliatory. They're trying to you know, calm everybody down. So the last thing they want to do is give the sense that they're going to weaponize the price of oil. And I think that's fair. I think it's probably the right thing for them to do, considering, you know, what all the chatter is about, and clearly what Erdogan said this morning in Turkey about it being planned versus being this accident that, you know, they're trying to tell everyone it was.
I don't Kenny, you and I are I'm not going to accuse you of being as old as me, but we've been around the block a few times. After this guy took over and after he basically pushed out all his cousins and everybody else who could possibly be a competitor, and he rounded everybody up and tortured them in a hotel.
Right.
Why is anybody shocked at this? The guy looked to me like a young Hitler 2 years ago. Why was everybody stunned?
I don't think it's a matter of everyone being stunned. I think it's just a matter of, you know, listen, we all know, like you said, what he did to his own family members within the confines of his country. I think the stunning part about this, or I think the part that's really, you know, kind of got the world talking about, is that, you know, it took place outside of their own borders. Not that it's right either way, but it took place outside of their own borders. And B, it took place in a consulate, which is like sacred ground in other countries. And so I think that's the part, audacity or the boldness of that move.
Yeah.
And then the way in which they have supposedly disposed of his body is revolting and disgusting to anyone who lives in the civilized world. And I think it's I think that's really the issue at the moment. I think that too will subside, but right now it's a really hot button issue, especially in the face of the Saudi investor conference, which, you know, they have going on, which was supposed to be the hottest ticket in finance and business going around the world, right? And so it's going to be this big opportunity for them to show, look what's happening in Saudi Arabia, look at how advanced we are, look at how, you know, we're moving towards being into the developed world versus an emerging world. And so I think all those factors together is creating kind of a bunch of this chatter. It's also creating, I think, a lot of the nervousness on top of interest rates and trade talk and all the other chatter that continues to dominate the picture.
Yeah, and how do you like Turkey, you know, stepping up and trying to be everyone's best friend?
Exactly.
You know, they're trying to
the
get in good graces.
Turkey stepped up.
Or did something.
Well,
this president came out. I was watching this morning when I came in. The Erdogan, when he held nothing back. I mean, he just laid it out and said the way it was. Which, you're right, he stepped up, which is not something necessarily they would have done before. But, you know, Turkey sits right in the middle, right? They're on both sides of the fence. They got the Saudis on one side, and they got the developed world on the other side, and they're trying to make their way.
Yeah, well, they're trying to make, they want those sanctions gone. I mean, his dictatorship vision, or, you know, visionary, where he's trying to get to, is not being helped by our economic sanctions on them, by any means.
Erdogan and the Saudi guy are like two peas in the pod, if you ask me.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Well, yeah, Lou's convinced, Kenny, that the reason why they know so much is they had the whole place bugged.
Well, there's no other way they could.
There's no doubt. But listen, I think I don't care what you say, I think everyone's got every consulate and embassy bugged around the world. We do, they do, the Russians do, everyone's bugging everybody. So come on, who's kidding who?
You sound like the guy in From Russia with Love. We follow their guys, they follow our guys.
But
remember that guy? Kenny, I have to ask. I know you got guys. You're a guy like me, you got guys?
Yeah.
You got guys on a payroll that if you need them to go cut up a body, they'll go?
Listen, I'm taking the Fifth Amendment on that one.
I was saying yesterday, my pay grade, my guys don't reach up to. They brought in a forensics guy, and then they used some local Turkish guys to dispose of the body. I'm going, they got guys like that. These guys are serious. I mean, that's.
Listen, did you? Well, I thought it was very interesting. Did you see the film, the news coverage about the guy that they got dressed up, put his clothes on, and walked out the back door pretending it was the journalists trying to you know, put everybody off? Like, oh yeah, look, he walked right out the back door. I mean, I'm just looking at the news last night, going, oh my god.
Well, was the girlfriend, is she still waiting out in front of the car or what?
I have no idea where the girlfriend was. I think when she got the notice on her Apple iPhone or the iCloud, whatever it was, I think, you know, she made hightailing it out of there because she figured she was next, right? No one's heard hide nor hair from this woman.
Well, didn't she drop him off to go in and get his... is something for the wedding? Wasn't that the story?
He was supposed to.
Yeah, but he told her to wait outside. And if he didn't come outside in 10 minutes or something, she was supposed to call somebody or whatever it was. And he didn't come out in 10 minutes for sure. And then she, you know, disappeared.
What, she called the Turkish embassy and say, turn on your microphone?
I haven't seen her since this happened, right? She hasn't said anything. She's made no comments. No one's interviewed her, nothing.
Well, I'd be sort of laying low if I was her. I mean,
yeah, I would agree. I would agree.
Yeah, but then again, who knows whether she got paid to drop him there at the expired time with everyone else there? I mean, you know.
Well, let's, Kenny. We got about 2 seconds here. Buy or sell here? Is it buy the dip or you let
this
one go?
I think we're going to hold at 27.10. That was the lows from last week. We need to see it hold there. The buyers defend the position. We tested it 2 minutes ago. We were at 27.12. We've now rallied back to 27.18. I think some of the Dow component numbers, which are horrendous today, CAT and Triple M, those stocks are down 8% and 6% ahead of the opening based on what their earnings are. But I think they're going to flush them. But I think it's going to hold right here at 27.10. It'll churn a little bit, and then we'll move on.
What about China? Are they going to hold any? Our guys get the idea that we could beat up on the rest of the world and it's never going to affect us. Why do we have people like that in office that think that? I mean,
that's a whole other conversation. Yes. We'll have
that
next week.
We'll have that next week. All right, buddy. Kenny, have a good week. Hope to see you. SP Futures down 37. Now back a little bit from the brink. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR. Innovation in Human Resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Hello, and OPEC Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Oshie. She's Stephanie Koenig. She's JZ on the board. SP Futures now only down 36. They were down 40. Like Kenny said, we bounced off that 2710 number. We got the Dow Futures still down 360. NASDAQ down 114. We got Caterpillar down 6%. Because they actually beat, but going forward, how do you give a huge estimate going forward when a lot of your sales are overseas? How can you look at China's market today and say you're going to have a big year over in China, for God's sake?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. I mean, you know, do they think that our trade war is not going to have any impact? These, Chinese have ultimate control over how they invest in our markets. I mean, it's not a free economy there.
No.
So is this payback? Are they pulling out? What, you know, as people suggested earlier today?
Well, they're not showing up for the auctions as much as they used to.
Yep.
You get this feeling, Steph, that people who are in control, and by the way, if somebody, when I say this, I say it not tongue in cheek, but if somebody put you and I in control like tomorrow,
right,
first thing we'd do is we'd be horrified about all the stuff we would love to know and don't, you know, for this deal, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a simple type of thing, and I've worried, other than the stuff we all talked about on the way in this morning, that I mean, I don't like what the president has done to the country in terms of people seem very able to say some of the most brutal, stupidest things I've ever heard out loud now. They seem to think that somehow that's okay. Now, whether or not they were always thinking it, and now you know, I don't know whether that's better or worse, but I really get this feeling that when you've got somebody... And I would never call Trump a dummy because he's got an amazing skill set or he wouldn't be in that spot. The skill set is just, but now he's in a place where the skill set is different. And I don't know if you're a Star Trekkie, but the movie the Search for Khan or whatever when they were after Khan,
yep.
And like Mike Spock said, he's brilliant, but his thinking is two-dimensional.
That's a great explanation.
Yeah, I just get this feeling that. Everything with the people he surrounded himself with and him, everything is this two-dimensional us against me against somebody. And yet the world is anything but, at that level, two-dimensional.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's not. And we know that there's a third dimension that we're not quite aware of, which is, you know, a lot of investments that we're not sure what he has and what he doesn't have in terms of positions, which I think adds a third dimension. But you're right in what we see.
You mean to him personally?
For him personally, right? You know, which is should have no bearing on our country, but it seems to. So I don't know. I'm 100% in agreement with that statement.
But I'm not sure is the things that I when I rag at the Fed. I do it for a lot of reasons, Steph. It's not that I don't like our buddies there. I sure do. But the Fed has, in my mind, it always seems like I'm criticizing them. Okay? But the thing is, I think their job is so important, and it's so hard to do, just to do it, I'm going to say, the correct and easy way. When you wander off the reservation and do these things kind of on the edge, I don't think there's any literature. I don't know if there's any real chances of you to even know what the hell you're doing out there. I mean,
no, the Fed is making up economic. I mean, a lot of the things the Fed has done over the last 8 years are things that have never been done by a Federal Reserve Bank anywhere in the world ever before. And so there is no economic data. There is no, you know, models that show exactly what has happened in the past that you can work with. And so, you know, they're charting new territory. So you're exactly right. A lot of that fringe stuff is, they're making it up kind of as they go along, and they're hoping it has the outcome that, you know, some economics individuals or economists think it should, and others disagree, and, you know, history will tell.
I just, how can I, actually, I think there are examples, Steph, but I don't see how you, I don't know how you get into the number. When I say examples, I think China has gone the direction I don't want to go.
For sure.
And in terms of, here's where I'm coming from. I might as well hit the nail, try and hit it on the head for once in my life. I'll be real simple. I don't know if you're a Bonanza fan, but they had the Virginia City Bank. Okay, and so you put your money in the Virginia City Bank, and once in a while they give somebody a loan. All right, well, they actually create money every time they do that, right? Because now if you got $1 million in there and you give somebody a loan for 100 grand, and he puts the 100 grand back in, how much is in the bank? $1,000,001.
Right.
Right. So,
well, it's going to pay interest. So
well, but still, where you probably have some reserve requirement. But if the Fed becomes so non-accommodative, like China has done, you drive. Not only is your job as the Fed to keep the money supply intact and growing at the right number, a very difficult one to begin with. If you start driving stuff outside the system that you can't control, the last thing you want as a Fed is people not being able to get a loan somewhere for their business or whatever, and have 50,000 payday loan joints on the corner. You don't want that because now it's out of your, you've driven it out of the system.
Yeah,
and then how do you control it then?
And the Fed has less control than the China Central Monetary Policy Group, because they at least can go to their leadership and say, hey, we want you to influence the people that are buying overseas investments to do X, Y, and Z, right? That doesn't happen here in the U.S.
Actually, I'm gonna push back on you on that one. In terms of what they control, I think you're 100% correct. But what they've done, from what I understand, and you probably know China better than me, what I understand is they've said, no, you can't get any more loans for whatever, these buildings and cities that don't even exist, in terms of people. We're not gonna let you borrow any more here. But I think they've let those people go outside the country, and there's this massive amount of dollar denominated debt where you and I were able to make a loan right to these people in dollars,
mm-hmm.
and didn't have to go into the Yuan, which is hard to do anyway, and put the money in a Chinese bank, okay, and then those people go to the Chinese bank and borrow the money, which is the way it ought to be, because then the Chinese central bank, in other words, I think you're absolutely correct. They keep tremendous control on what they can control, but they've let so much, that's my point, they've let so much get out of the system with the regional banks and provincial banks.
Provincial.
I don't think they control them like the Fed can control the people here. So they have a problem. Because I'm going to say half the loans in the country are out of their purview, which is exactly what you don't want as a central bank, in my opinion.
Well, you at least want to be aware and have some influential power over them.
But how would you? How would you?
But you wouldn't, unless you know. Just maybe go back to the strong arm approach. You know, we need some big guys. I mean, that approach might be the only approach.
Well, but
you got.
What if they default? If a Chinese company defaults on its dollar-denominated debt, and you're a Chinese central bank, and you're pissed off the U.S. anyway, why do you care?
Well, you don't. In fact, you almost want them to default now,
yeah,
so that you can use that for your gain.
Well, that's right. And because that's what, I mean, I think I would need to sit down with people that really know this stuff for a long time before I made a decision from anything like the Oval Office, because I'm not privy. I know enough to know that everything you do affects everybody else, but I clearly don't know as much as we would hope a Fed guy would know. Like our guys can tell you if an exchange goes under here, well, how it ripples through the whole thing. I wouldn't know that, but our guys would know that. But I mean, I don't think the guys there right now ask these questions. I mean, I hope they do. I can't imagine Wilbur Ross thinking he doesn't know everything, or Trump.
Well, so Wilbur Ross and Trump, I think, are two examples, but I think...
Who's the other guy? Navarro?
Yes.
He knows everything, too. So did Bannon.
But I think, you know, those are not the guys who are in charge of the Federal Reserve. Thank goodness, because at least the individuals, I think, who are working at the Fed have a wider and a broader view, not back to your point earlier about this two-dimensional, well, it's good or it's bad. Or I guess they're into black and white, right?
Yeah.
Either it's a good trade or treaty or it's a bad treaty, right? There can't be positives and negatives. And I think, you know, they're driving that sentiment into everything we do. You know, the immigrants coming up from South America, good example. No, you know, it's all bad, right? Well, yeah, it's not a good thing probably to have this parade of individuals trying to get into our country. But the question is back to your question this morning, why are they coming? Like, there's a lot of gray areas, isn't it? And a lot of things that, unfortunately, people these days don't want to hear about.
Well, yeah, I mean, what is going on? How do you even find out? I mean, I actually, since I don't think there was the world's greatest place for news, but I used to get a lot of news about what was going on not in Guatemala. A lot of these places from Al Jazeera America, and they went under.
I know, but they were actually interesting.
Yeah, but how did, if you want to, how the hell do you find out what's going on in Honduras? First of all, I don't know why you'd want to, but if you did, I mean, this is the only place I think that does it, and I used to get the damn thing, the Journal of Political Economy would have something. God, was it boring. The last 20 pages was a summary of what's going on like every country in the world. Economically, if you could, boy, if talk about a cure for insomnia, but I mean, still, there would be something in there that if you had one of those things, you'd open up to the page that says Honduras, and they might say, yeah, at a place that unemployment's 40% or something. I mean, people have no idea. The unemployment. I mean, you look at Gaza or someplace,
yep.
You say, yeah, why are they always having problems over there? What's the unemployment rate between males 16 to 40 is what, like 40%? Whenever you have a place like that, I guarantee you, you've got problems. Guys, if they're not working, they're causing trouble.
Yep.
Basically.
100%, you know, and they either do one of a couple of things. I mean, young men need to prove themselves one way or another. They either join a militant group because then they can, you know, prove themselves. They hang around and cause trouble, or they go get a job and get busy and become productive members of society.
Right.
You know, and maybe there's a fourth that I'm not aware of at the moment, but that seems to be around the world.
Well, you could always just inherit money.
That's true, but then you usually have too much money and too much time, which gets you to be the troublemaker. So,
well, but at least you have girls after you if you got too much dough.
Well, hey, I can't speak for that.
just saying. In immortal words of Coach, if you got dough, they'll work with you.
I think that works in any scenario.
Oh, God, yeah. I think it works on both sides of that. Although most guys, when they're young, probably don't think about marrying a rich lady, but when they're older, they're thinking, man, why didn't I do that?
Well, a lot of old wealthy widows who seem with very young second husbands or third husbands. So I think it's definitely prevalent. It just may not be as openly obvious, I guess, in society.
if we start going down kind of this rat hole, I think the inflation number. You know, everybody. I mean, you've mentioned it 7-8 times today. You keep talking about the Fed raising rates. Do you, and again, first of all, you're younger, which is a good thing. Do you honestly think that the Fed controls rates?
Well, I mean, it controls rates is one thing. So they obviously can't raise the rates to 12% just because they want to. That would really destroy the economy, and frankly, they'd, you know, Congress and would come in and try and disband them. So the answer is no, they don't 100% control rates, but they are the ones that are supposed to be setting monetary policy. So
correct.
From that perspective, yes, they do control rates.
Well, okay, but I mean, because this is interesting down at this level where the rates have been. And you got a lot of people, real estate people, everybody, you know, pretty much bitching a blue streak here that these rates are going up and it's affecting their business, especially where the prices have gone. And I get the pain. There's going to be some. But the point is if all of a sudden people see an inflation rate, say 2.5-3%, okay, and one that, you know, is more universal than just you.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if you were 70 and you and your husband got $400 worth of drugs a month, it's now 1,000 over the last 10 years, your inflation rate has been dramatically different than somebody else's. If you had four kids going to college, next year, your inflation rate over the last 10 years has been dramatically different than somebody else's.
Right.
I mean, it's, and we continue to knock these things down and not count them. But if you and your significant other and your, all your, if you all of a sudden say, you know what, me giving money to somebody for 10 years at 2% when the inflation rate is really like 4 is the stupidest friggin' trade I've ever heard. It's you that are going to cut back on that and say, I'm not going to do that. That's, I mean, it's unless the central banks are so overriding that, you know, in Europe, I can go buy a bond for a zero interest rate because Draghi's behind me in line with his checkbook.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think, Steph, there's no way on earth you could ever be dumb enough to give somebody money for 10 years and at the end of 10 years get less than you gave them back. Yet they're there. They're there because these central banks are driving these prices up. But I think people have just gotten to the point right now. I know my clients are. I'm not giving any money for 30 years at 2%. When I see the inflation, they're admitting to 2.2. Why would I ever do that? That means I'm giving it to them for zero.
Well, and that's part of the problem with the industry that we're in at the moment. You know, a lot of the industry and a lot of the money that was made in the industry was based off having an interest rate that provided some, at least overnight rates where they were making some decent money. That kept them in the green for years, and they have not had that cash flow or that money-making strategy available to them for, you know, at least a good 10 years. So it's going to be interesting to see how it affects a lot of these businesses. And you're right, there's a downturn, and there's a lot of downturn in a lot of different markets. But I think overall it'll get us healthier to have an actual fluctuating interest rate that actually reflects where the market, where economy, where the world is, as opposed to this, you know, rate which really is insignificant and doesn't mean anything to anyone. So
how are we going to get somebody as bright as you 5 years from now or 10 years from now when this is all over to write up a report card and said the entire U-turn down from 4 or 3 or wherever we started down to 0 and back up, was it worth it at all? I'm gonna you don't want to start writing something when you already think you have your conclusion.
We should get Robert to write it.
Yeah, I'm gonna say that the entire exercise was fruitless. We should never have gone that low, and I don't know how I could prove it. The difference. I mean, I know from my studies in monetary economics or monetary theory that if you've got an interest rate at 4 and you want to slow the market down a little bit or slow the economy down, you can raise it to 5, 5.5, or you can lower it to 3% and you can goose it up a little bit. The idea that you're gonna, when you're not giving loans to people anyway, lowering some listed rate from 1 to 0.5%, when the plumber going in there to get the new plumbing truck can't get a loan to save his life. I don't know what you've done to anybody. I think you've accomplished anything, Steph. I think you've damaged that way. I don't know how I can prove it. I don't even know how to write that paper. But I think there's a, you know, it's like if you're running a marathon and every time there's a table for water you stop for a water bottle. If I give you 2, you can't drink 2.
Well, you know, you got to go work with the Federal Home Loan Bank. They're the ones that manage all those small banks. They're the ones that provide a lot of monetary programs to allow those banks to loan out to individuals. You know, so they help those smaller banks that the Federal Reserve doesn't support get and maintain healthy portfolios. So they do an amazing job, and they're kind of one of those undersung, underheard of groups that are part of our federal system. But man, those guys do great work, and they are a really smart, interesting bunch, having worked with them quite a bunch.
I think a lot of people in the use the term bureaucracy actually do a hell of a good job. But it can all get torpedoed, I think, Steph. I don't know. You might know more about this than me because you work with those guys. But we've had people here, PTI clients, more of my brothers than mine. They actually put together 7, 8 years ago, and I don't think they're doing as much now because it's a little freer than it was. They put together loaning companies to loan people money because all of a sudden, buried in the backdrop, or a small company. You don't have any corporate veil anymore. I mean, this has been, I mean, if you and I, Steph and Chief's Plumbing Company, if we've got five trucks and we want the sixth truck, and we go in and the plumbing company is a corporation or an LLC, I'm going to say that even if we've been in business 50 years, Steph, and the two of us are croaking along at 70, we've never missed a payment, they're going to, the new bureaucrats want us to give a personal guarantee in out of banks. And the reason why these guys were able to get a percent or two more higher than a bank, if you could find a bank, was because they didn't require a personal guarantee, and all of a sudden the Fed wants these guys to get, the federal government wants these guys to get a personal guarantee. Why? You don't see Jamie Dimon giving a personal guarantee for whatever, JP Morgan. I mean, it's, I mean, now in the securities industry, I've heard from people who, are accused by somebody of doing something bad. These are people I know. All of a sudden, everybody's named personally, even if it's Merrill Lynch.
Yeah, well, the rules have changed with regards to that. So now you personally can be named. So before the SEC and CFTC regulatory stuff, you couldn't personally be named. A company would, you know, ultimately be liable. It doesn't mean you wouldn't go to jail or you wouldn't be held accountable, but it was really the company's responsibility to police you and manage and make sure that you were, you know, behaving appropriately. Well, a lot of that has gone away. They've made personal liability now a big part of this. And that's with a lot of the regulatory changes that have happened over the last.
But those are insane. Why should, if my plumbing company, why, if I have a corporation, that's why I have a corporation.
I agree with that. You know, I understand. And if you're a plumbing company at the moment, so, you know, back in 07, 06, a lot of these plumbing companies and stuff couldn't get loans because it was, the banks had so much money invested in mortgage industry because it was so profitable at this point that they didn't have any money on the books to give out to people to buy a new truck, right? That wasn't where they were making money, and so they weren't doing those kinds of loans. It has shifted quite a bit. We're not as mortgage focused or as mortgage, you know, their portfolios aren't based on that. They've diversified again. They're back out doing more business loans and stuff like that. So I think it is easier to get a loan, but yeah.
I think it's marginally easier. Our buddies, we keep talking about our Fed buddies. One night they told me by the way, you probably know what's, you know what M0 is?
In reference to what?
Money supply.
Oh, vaguely.
It's the money that these banks kick back to the Fed overnight because they got too much money.
Yes.
M0 is bigger than M1.
Of course it is at the moment.
Yeah, which is insane.
Yeah, but recognize the banks they're talking about. They only deal with the top 5% of some banks or something. There's only something like 10 or 15 banks that actually work with the Fed, right? All the other banks are the little banks, and those all work with the Federal Home Loan Bank. So,
well, they actually work with the top banks work. They're regulated by the comptroller.
Correct.
The next group, any national bank works with the Fed.
But they can't go up to the window and borrow and give them money directly.
Right. But I guess what I'm saying is we have the banks. The interesting part, there was a credit union in St. John Fisher that my stepfather is the only guy who ran it, and Barney was the guy who sat there and took your dough. And what he said was, we're doing good. We got a lot of deposits. We better get a few loans or we're going to go broke.
Yep.
I mean, because if you don't give loans, if you're not paying anybody anything, Steph, all you're doing is paying people exorbitant salaries, which, you know, that's an editorial comment. You don't care. But if all of a sudden you actually are paying people 2 and 3% for their savings, you better go out and get some loans or you're going broke.
Yeah, because you got more money going out than you do coming in.
But because right now, I'm going to say, what do you suppose... from the bigger banks, I don't know if you're a Chase or a City Girl or whatever. Not like the song, City Girl seemed to find out early. Not that kind. I'm going to say that your interest rate is negative for most people because you're not making the interest. If you screw up a second on your debit card or something like that, they're going to charge you. And if you happen to, and if you have less than $5,000 in there, which I'm going to say, well over 50% of the country has, they're probably charging you $15 a month. So you really are in a negative interest situation.
Right.
And they're turning around and giving that to the Fed at 1 3/4 per night. So if your negative interest comes up to say 0.5% with the fees and everything, or maybe as much as 1%, they're actually making 2.75% on you. They don't have to go get a loan. They don't need any risk. They're just giving it to the federal government. I mean, that to me is unconscionable in the system.
Well, I agree, and that's where the fees, you know, the fees got kicked in because there was no interest. There were no making, they were not making money at all on that side. But in theory, if interest rates rise, fees should decline. Right now, whether that happens or not is a whole other thing. It's sort of like the airline industry, you know. They're making hand over fist on bags, right? It's kind of the same general concept.
Well, the amount of dough, we have a Sam's Club membership for everybody here, and so people get their prescriptions there and so forth. So I go there, and I get the new card, right? And the first day, they go, here, you know, we'll give you $10 off if you like use the card. All right, so I charge $200 on the card, nothing major. And I'm like, where the hell is that bill? You know, it was like 6 weeks later. Where's my Sam's bill? All of a sudden, it comes and it was at the wrong office in the building or something. And I get the thing, and I pay it. Then the next month as well, I think the late fee was $40.
Yeah.
And then I was paying. So it was $220. The fees for the interest and the late fee for 1 month, I think, were $55. Well, so that's 25% a month.
Yep.
And if the same bank, if PTI had $200,000 sitting in there, we're getting nothing.
Yep.
Well, that's a hell of a scalp on yourself.
It's a good return.
It's a good. I mean, I think that the way this has worked out with the Fed, I think they better get control over it soon, and I think they better tell the president to buzz off or something, which they're never going to do. But
they're never going to publicly do.
No, but what do you make of? The in terms of the election, real quick, because we all jam, we can still talk. What do you make of the election with all the Republican senators coming out and screaming at Trump that he's not being hard enough on the Saudis? Because it's easy to do if you're not the one who causes people's gas to go up by 20 cents.
I don't know. You know, I find it interesting the rhetoric that's going on now. I'm confused about what everyone's position is or where they're trying to go, both on the left and on the right. Yeah, we hear the right and what they're arguing, but I just don't have a clear picture as to what people are driving towards.
No, I don't either. I mean, I think it's a kind of a skewed election. I mean, in the districts, it probably isn't. I mean, people have Illinois here, we don't have anybody running, really, so.
The local level, I get it, but yeah.
Well, we don't have a senator running.
No.
And in my district, I think the guy's unopposed for the House, so for me, there basically is no election. S&P futures still down 36. We'll be right back, Mr. John Neal, Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate.
That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Hill. Stephanie Koenig, John Neal, State, Jessica, Jay-Z on the board. I'm reading these numbers. Yeah, we're still down almost 400 in the Dow. NASDAQ futures down 120 in the S&P's down 40, so we keep bouncing off this 2710 that Kenny was talking about, and he was very concerned if we went through there, but we sure look like we want to go through there. I got it, well, they're down 3875, so 2710 is like down 40 or something. Anyway, around the rest of the world, not good. All we're seeing is red arrows everywhere. DAX down 191, 1.7%, FTSE down 70. They're the best. They're only down 1%. CAC around down 54, 1.1%. Over in Asia, remember that huge rally we talked about yesterday in China? Nikkei down 604, 2.7. Shanghai down 60. That's 2.6. They were up 4 yesterday. So they're still not back down to 2550 like they were, but they're 2594 back under 2600. Hang Seng, however, which did not really participate in the rally so much yesterday, is down over 3% today, 806 points, 25,346. That's a low number for those guys. We've got oil down now $1.20, which is as low as I've seen it. Brent down $1.69. That spread has come in again. It's now $10. Spread was like $10.80 2 days ago, Steph. And now it's $10.
Wow.
And if you just traded that spread, of course, that's a massive contract.
It is.
Natural gas up 3 cents, 3.17. RBOB 1.86. The good news for some of my guys, gold up 16.80. That's a big move. Silver up 19 cents. So I don't have any calls this week, unfortunately, because now it's moving. But we do have a lot of gold and we got a lot of silver. But Jay-Z, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Thanks, Chief. Good morning, everyone. The time is now 7:36. Clear and sunny skies here in Chicago today. The high is 52 with a low of 41. Phoenix is cloudy with a high of 86, low 65. Falcons brought home a win against the Giants last night with a final score of 23-20. Mavericks beat the Bulls yesterday with a final score of 115-109. And the Warriors beat the Suns, ending the game 123-103. There are no accidents to report at the moment. That's all I have for now. Back to you.
John, how are you?
Good. Good morning.
By the way, I know you and Steph have your favorite college teams. And the colleges are doing the most for you. Say, for instance, that you wanted to follow your college team through the playoffs, like in the day when people in Nebraska, if they whenever their team went and played, they'd get in the Winnebago stuff that was like 40 years old. You wonder how the damn thing still ran, and they'd head off to the game. When I did the national championship, I went to the game. Lou Holtz was the coach. Irish played, was it West Virginia, I think, John, back in 1988. The amount of people...
I believe that's correct.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, it was out by you guys. It was at Sun Devil Stadium. And
Yeah, it was the Fiesta Bowl.
Yeah, and I,
people were there that drove out in their campers and so forth. I remember because I went to the Chuck Box still there?
Yeah, the great hamburger place. And when I was in college, that was the place to go get a hamburger. But I believe it's still there. Yeah.
So get a load of this. Talk about stuff. I was in. This is years ago. I go in there and they've got like the, I don't know, is it the burger? Then they got the big one, right? So of course, I order the big one. And guess what happens?
What?
Talk about being made to look like a small man. Guy behind me goes, "Give me the great big one." and I said to JD, "We got to get a great big one and split it." He goes, "We're already getting a burger." I said, "Doesn't matter. We got to get one of these." And so I said to the guy, "We need a great big one too. And cut it in half." Boy, was it good. And anyway, Jen. So now this year, if you go to the week before, the two playing games are in Miami and in Dallas. Now Dallas, not so bad. Guess where the final is?
I don't know. Where is it?
I don't know.
San Francisco.
Really?
So let's say, for instance, I was going to say Nebraska. Nebraska is not close to being in. But say you are Ohio State and they somehow right the ship, or Michigan, or even the Irish. But I can't imagine them. Well, I don't think they're that good. But anyway, let's say, for instance, Michigan gets in there. You're playing in Miami. You got to drive to Miami and somehow make it to Frisco by the next week and back just to see your team. You think anybody cares about the live gate anymore? They don't care about it. It's people. It's all TV. It's like you're like the studio audience or something. I mean, who could even consider doing that? Well, first you got to go to the Big Ten Championship in Indianapolis. That's 3 weeks before. Then you got to go to Miami, and then you got to go to San Francisco to see your team.
I got to make enough money so I can retire and take my Winnebago and follow my team.
Yeah, well,
what's the point in going to San Francisco? Not exactly a hotbed there, you know, for college athletic.
On top of where are you going to stay and where are you going to park your Winnebago?
I know where you'd stay, Steph. You'd be at the Fairmont.
Yeah, right.
You'd be running around. Connie Sulk is still there from the show. Remember how long ago was that hotel? That place is still spectacular, though.
It is. It is amazing.
We took my mom wanted to go out and see San Francisco. It's been, she'd been dead a while, but she wanted to go, so we took her out there, and we stayed at the what's the place across the street? The Mark Hopkins.
Yeah.
On the weekends, God, that was neat.
I've stayed at Mark Hopkins a lot. It's a nice place.
Oh yeah. If you watch the movie Bullet, the place hasn't changed. It looks exactly like it did. And how many years ago was that? 35, 40? San Francisco doesn't change much.
It's a classic.
So, Jan,
usually your hotel rooms, even in the real nice hotels, is about as big as a closet everywhere else.
Well, the Fairmont, they're like an apartment. They're huge.
Yeah, they're huge.
That place,
are they?
Oh, yeah, that place
is
spectacular.
It's an old building that they have just classic, beautiful old rooms. It's gorgeous.
Just going in the lobby, Jan, and sitting down and having a drink and just watching the people go by. And just the old opulence and the chairs are all, 800 pounds of stuffing. It's like it never changed. It's like something from the 1890s or something.
It is. Yeah, it's amazing.
Anyway.
Well, I remember years ago I used to have to go to the, I think it was called the St. Francis there.
Well, that's downtown. That's beautiful.
Okay. Well, yeah, you go in the lobby, it's opulent as heck. You go up to the room, and that's what I mean. It's just these teeny tiny rooms, though, yep. Even though it's such an exclusive hotel.
Well, what's the one down the block? The Clift, where the lounge is all done in the ancient redwood? The gorgeous bar, because it's all done in redwood.
I don't think I've been there.
It's a pretty neat place. It's about two blocks up the street on Geary or whatever. Anyway, then you can never grab the cable car down there. It's always mob waiting for a line.
They got to be willing to hang off.
Yeah, you got to be willing to hang off. And it's so funny. People, the guy who, there's no way that the cable car would pass any kind of muster with today's, OSHA. Yet the guy who's running the thing is always telling the people that are hanging off, "Hey, pull your camera in, you idiot," because he'd be like hitting the car doors with the guy with the camera or something. I mean, it's not for the handicapped, should we put it that way. I mean, you're hanging off the damn thing.
It's apparently
and the other thing is that, go into a cab there is putting your life in your hands, too.
Yeah. But apparently the cable car is actually very environmentally friendly.
Well, sure it is. It's electric motors.
Yeah.
You were in the building where the things actually turn.
Oh, isn't that awesome?
That's pretty awesome.
It's the coolest thing.
My first business trip was to, make that my second, was to San Francisco. This is back in 1977 or 8, something like that.
So a couple years ago.
Yeah, a couple years ago. And back when, cars weren't as good as they are now, they would have people that their job was to run around and put notes on your car that you didn't
park it correctly.
Didn't put your wheel into the curb.
Yeah.
And they used to average something like 75 runaways a month.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you put your Volkswagen Bug, you'd put the, you know, you put the emergency brake on, and all of a sudden the brake had let go on some big, and these cars would be like flying down a hill with no driver. You know,
right.
And hurting people and doing God knows what. So they would always be running around, and they'd be really pissed at you if you didn't move your, when's the last time somebody parked ever where you nosed your tire into the curb? I mean, I've done it in some really hilly places. I've never done it in Chicago in my life. You know, we're flat here. Yeah, we're flat. I mean, see, all right, John, we've managed to not talk about the market for 10 minutes. It's been a nice 10 minutes.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, what the hell's going on? I know it's China coming back the other way from yesterday. Did they say they were going to do something to help their market? All of a sudden they rallied up and then they didn't really mean it, or people didn't believe it, and all of a sudden we're flying back down the other. This is before, right before the election too. This is, I'm stunned. I would have guessed, you know, John, you've been listening to me talk. As much as I'm not a big fan, I was a 90%er that he would somehow declare victory on this Chinese thing the week before the election, and I give that about a 10% chance now. I don't think they're even talking. And I mean, I never dreamed that this would go this far. I mean,
no, the farmers are getting hit. I mean, it's hard.
Yeah, I mean, it's the guy.
Yeah, but don't be surprised if there's just some non-substantive news reports that come up to try to prop this up even further, because you're already seeing it, as you alluded to earlier, Tom, bounce off some of these support levels, or at least try to bounce off some of these support levels. So, you know, they'll try to prop it up later on. You know, they probably got their heads together right now, figuring out some things to say or whatever. I hate to be such a, I don't know the word I'm looking for. But
well, the man has lived by the market, in his own words, and
right.
But now when it's going the other way, he's going to find fault with the Fed or somebody. But the Fed is actually. Actually, I was looking at a couple numbers last night, and while we're talking, I'll dig them up again. They've actually cut back a little bit on the growth of money, depending on which one you look at. What I look at is this H6 release, comes out every week or so. And I've got for the last 3 months, from June to the end of September, growth in M2 is down to 3.5%, which is way below. It's about as low as I've seen it, Steph and Jan.
Yep.
Which means they are cutting back some, or at least not expanding it as much. But now if you look at the 13 weeks, they're sort of back up to 4.5. So let's cut that in the middle and say they're down to like 4, which still shows a little bit of withdrawing. I won't say withdrawing, because you're still growing, but not growing as fast. And if you look at the decrease in the Fed balance sheet, because Dan always wings this one at me. They didn't decrease it at all in the last 2 weeks, when the market was starting to go south and the president basically bitching at them. They didn't take anything off the balance sheet. I'll get the exact numbers here, but the recent balance sheet trends. How's this for? Look at this one, Steph. Some night where you can't sleep and away you go to Never Never Land.
I can't wait. It might be tonight.
Instantly,
yeah. might be tonight. Well, from the. They're down from a year ago. Total assets on the balance sheet were $4.44 trillion. Now they're down to 4.1. So they're down 300 billion, and they're supposed to be doing what? They were doing 25 a month, and it was supposed to go to 50 or 40. So they're probably they've done 60% to 2/3 of what they said they were going to do, which I guess is pretty good for the Fed. But now if you look here. On Wednesday, October 3rd, with the market getting banged around last week, we didn't do anything for the next October 17th. We're actually up a little bit. So whatever the Fed was doing on the balance sheet with the mortgage stuff being labeled, you know, rolling off, they stopped letting it roll off 2 weeks ago as the market started to have a little trouble. So it's not like they don't have their eye on the market a little bit, Steph and Jan. I mean, they're not just going to let the market correct 35% and not do something. I don't think. They spent 9 years propping the assets back up, for God's sake. They just let them all go back down?
Well, they can't. They have a huge balance sheet, too. So.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to go to... But I'm saying right now, what would you do? I mean, imagine the grade Why do I keep thinking Stefan would be a great teacher? What grade would you give your students if after 8 years the market, the housing prices, and everything else, I won't say go back to where they were, but go back halfway where they were, now you're stuck with a federal budget deficit of God knows what and then a $4 trillion on the balance sheet. Would you say you did the job right?
Well, who am I? Because if I'm the president of the United States right now, I've got an A plus.
Oh yeah, well, when the Fed gives himself an A, Greenspan, could you possibly have done a worse job than Greenspan? And he gives himself an A.
Yeah, Greenspan definitely missed.
I call it a D minus. Yeah, that's okay.
You're not gonna flunk him. You're gonna give him a D minus and let him go to
right.
The
just so I don't. Just I don't totally depress them, so there's a little incentive there, right?
Well, I mean, he had the 1% during the 2006 or 7, right, which led right up to the bubble of the 2007 and 8, and he put all that money in before Y2K, which meant that what we topped out on the market in what 2001, right after that. I mean, every time you put money in, it goes into the market, it gets too high and it comes back down. I mean, whatever.
I don't know. Greenspan had a long... this is like one of those things. Greenspan had a really long run. So in a long run, you're bound to make more mistakes in a short run. So, you know, there is some of that there. So I'm going to go more with the B plus than the F.
D plus.
Oh, D plus. That's what you said. Sorry.
No, that's what you said, I thought. Or you say B plus.
I thought you said a B.
No, John said D minus. Didn't you, John?
John, what'd you say?
D minus.
D as in dog?
Dog minus.
Got it.
All right. You're boy plus over there?
Well, I'd say, you know, I was just, I thought he said B plus, so I was just.
Oh, you were, okay.
Piling on.
Jeez, we can't even get the, well, how are we going to remember who liked the Bears and what the records were if we can't even figure out what the.
But as long as we don't talk about B's and D's in the same sentence, we're probably fine.
True. But you look at this and you wonder why, I don't know, I just have this odd feeling that in my lifetime that was such a horrible time, Steph and John, you got to take my word for it, that the thought of getting back, the thought of the word stagflation being pulled out of the safe and being tossed around, I thought we'd buried that one for good. And it looks like maybe we haven't.
Nothing dies forever.
It was a horrible time. A horrible time. And,
right.
I mean, it's economically. And, I mean, I can't believe, but now if we go back there, now we're doing it with massive debt. At least we didn't have that kind of debt back then.
Yeah, what do you think about this whole, Trump came out this morning announcing he wants to do a 10% tax cut for the middle class. If we keep cutting taxes and then we don't hire anyone to go after people who don't pay taxes, meaning the IRS, where are we going to stand in the long run?
I think when somebody, I'm going to dig this up here. You've made me do it, Steph, but I still like it.
It seems to be all my fault today.
Well, you know, what's the worst thing that could happen to me, Jen, when I'm on the show?
I'm not sure.
Somebody drives me to the usdebtclock.org because all it does is aggravate me.
Oh, okay. But answer that question, too, is lots coming in, more going out. Is a negative gain, so...
Because the thing is, I can always question Steph because she knows all this stuff. Where do you define middle class, though?
Well, what is the actual definition, or what?
I mean, when you say pick me a number, one number where you'd say middle class.
Oh, I don't know. Are we talking income levels?
Yeah.
I think that's it. I think middle class is something between what's in poverty is 30,000 and below or something. I don't know, John. Do you know?
It's something like that, so I would have to say, 50, 60 in there, they might call middle class.
Yeah.
Well, I would say you better be higher than that, especially if two people are working. But let's pick 75. I mean, this is what, when Trump says something like that, this is the thing that bugs the hell out of me, because you would think that your people that you elect and are in these jobs, I'm not going to accuse the man of not knowing, but whenever somebody on CNBC or somebody starts talking about taxes, and they, in their mind, they're one percenters, they immediately think of income tax.
Right.
And yet, when you look at the taxes that people pay in this economy, here's what the taxes are in the U.S., okay? Income tax revenue is $1.7 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so there's your income tax. All right, payroll tax is $1.2 trillion, which everybody pays. So right. Even if you cut the middle class income tax piece by 10%, your payroll taxes aren't going to go down at all, right?
No. Nope.
Now your guess what your state revenue is $1.6 trillion. So it's as much as the federal income tax, and your local revenue is $1.35 trillion, which is again so. If you had all those together, where are you? 3.9, 5, 6.7. 1.7 out of the 6.7 is what Trump's talking about. So it's like somebody being stone cold ignorant and saying, illegal people here illegally don't pay taxes. Well, if they go buy a sandwich downtown, they're paying 11.5%. They're living somewhere, they're paying. So the burden, and the middle class person he's talking about, is probably 90% other than what he controls. So what you end up having to have here, which is the same thing happened with the Reagan administration, is they had this huge tax cut in 81. In 82, they had something, what was it called, John? The Fiscal Responsibility Act or something?
Yep.
Which essentially raised the taxes back up, but they didn't raise them on the income tax side, they raised the payroll taxes. So I think what you're going to end up having is Trump is going to say, we're going to drop this tax, we're going to make it permanent, and then they're going to raise the gas tax, they're going to raise the Social Security tax, and they're going to raise Medicare tax, which for somebody who's under 75 grand puts them in a massive net positive on the tax.
It's a lot more expensive for them.
Right, and not to mention, anything that you cut back from, Medicaid and everything else that they're trying to do, you're kicking back to the states, and the states are going to raise it up again. So it's all silly putty. They kick it, they lower your federal income tax and kick it to the state, and guess what? The state raises your tax. So your total remains always going up, right? And so you know what I'm saying? It's for him to even mention income tax. Obviously, if you're Trump, you care, well, I mean, the guy probably pays a hell of a lot of property taxes, too. But I'm saying, by and large, for Trumpo himself, he's probably worried about his income tax. I mean, Wilbur Ross is worried about his estate tax. They're not worried about their sales tax on a sandwich downtown here, where the somebody who's a runner on the floor and has lunch every day for $10 and is paying, you know, $1.11 tax every single day. That's a chunk out of his business. Now, Wilbur Ross is not going to care about that. So, I mean, I'm saying these numbers are all over the place. And whenever somebody says tax and means income tax, you know the person's got some money, is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I have to believe, John, that if they cut back on some of the hospitalization stuff coming out of Washington and Medicare and so forth and Medicaid, that you're going to find somewhere in Arizona, you're going to have to pick up the slack, and somebody somewhere, whoever it is, the county, whether it's the county, the city, or the state, you're going to find a tax increase there. At the end of the day, you haven't gained a dime, or you might be.
Oh, right. The state is going to have to kick into access out here to make up for that deficit, exactly.
So, I mean, you'd like to have somebody who actually would tell you the truth. And I'm not about to say that Obama did, or the Democrat, if he wins, would. So I just like somebody to tell you the truth. I mean, last night I asked our buddies over a cocktail, I said, why didn't, when Obama cut the deal with the Iranians and gave them their money, that they were the progress payments on the stuff, why doesn't the president, or whoever it is, take out a column in the New York Times or some fake news place, or now all you got to do is, I guess, you can't tweet it out. So why don't you just explain what you did?
I don't understand that about the Democrats. They can't seem to actually... Maybe the explanation's too long and it doesn't fit in a soundbite. I don't know. John, do you have an opinion on that?
Well, I think there's just too much they don't want us to know. You know. Frankly, I think both sides would rather leave us a little bit in the dark and the less we know better and, keep both sides kind of... riled up, so they're they butt heads against each other, and that's good business for both political parties not to get along.
No,
my opinion.
Good point.
Do you think it's possible that with the money to Iran, that the reason why they didn't want to? I would find it just easy. Okay, everybody's basically bitching at me for doing this. Here's what I did on such and such a date. The Iranian government sent this money over for planes and stuff that we never delivered. So the money was here, and we just sent it back to them. Oh, by the way, we sent them cash because we one of the sanctions is they're not in the international banking community, and they basically can't cash a check, which we've made it impossible for them to do, so we had to send them cash. I mean, at least that's an explanation. I'm guessing. See if I'm going crazy on the conspiratorial number here. You guys can both yell at me. I think the reason they didn't do it is because they didn't get the money from Grumman or whoever made the F-14. I think the companies kept the dough. Maybe sold the planes. Maybe had to give the planes to us at a cheaper price. And I think the U.S. government paid Iran back.
Interesting.
Oh, I mean, right. Where the tendrils of this stuff goes, I think, is one of the problems, and that's part of what I meant. Actually, I think they can't let us into these type of things because of where this creeping ivy is going. You know, God knows where it's crept in and who's involved and what players are involved. And I mean, I think we would just be absolutely, I don't know if I'd be shocked anymore, but I think a lot of people would be shocked, you know, where all these things end up, start at A, but Lord, where do they go, who do they involve, so on and so forth.
You mean, it would never end. Whatever you wrote, there'd be more questions.
I mean, it was, favor after favor, I'm gonna use the word payoff after payoff, regardless of political party, both political parties would like us to believe that the other one is the most corrupt in the world. And the problem is, one of the things that's bipartisan, in my opinion, is corruption.
Well, John, they never go there. They never sit there and go, this John Neal guy, he's a bleep. He took all this money from Merck. They'll never do that because you could turn around and say, well, you took yours from Pfizer, you bleep.
Right. Or we both took it together. I think that's the... The more common reason is we both took it together.
So does John sound like a money manager, Jack Nicholson? You can't handle the truth?
Exactly. I think it would explode people's minds. It'd be like that horror movie from years ago called Scanners.
Oh, God.
People's heads exploding.
All right, John, we'll talk to you Friday, bud. SP Futures still down 37. It looks like an ugly day. Maybe we'll come back. No matter what we do, we'll talk about it tomorrow morning. Thank you, Jay-Z. Thank you, Steph. Thank you, John. Be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.